Joining us now are friends and regular contributors. They have been speakers with Family Life's Weekend to Remember for over 20 years. Cindy's been a contributor to Pause for Prayer since 1998. Joe and Cindy Farini, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
And hello, are you?
Happy New Year.
You too. Boy, exciting to have you guys back for another year. I like that you're kind of focusing on that idea of 10 things we can do to focus on marriage for the next year. We got a lot to go through. So let's just jump right into it. Who wants to get us going?
Well, I can get started here. I think, on the top of my list of things is just the importance of just being a student of your spouse. And, when we first got married, newlyweds, all we could think about was just spending time together and talking all night and longingly looking into each other's eyes. You know, then 5 years go by and two or three kids come along, and then you're just trying to remember what each other look like, you know, and it's just really kind of sad to realize that, you know, there is a tendency just to gradually drift away from each other. And I think the only thing I can tell you is that becoming a student of your spouse can become more difficult the longer you're married. And the way to solution to that is just to be very intentional about spending more time together. And, some of the things that we're even doing is just doing some activities together. And we have this little booklet that we have right now has to do with, do you know your husband? Do you know your wife? Just a series of questions that just kind of go back and forth and just open some communications lines that you have to be very intentional about opening up for each other. So, I mean, that's one thing.
Yeah, and you know, Lauren, you're kind of in the middle of that phase he was talking about where you got two kids, and so you really don't have time to gaze at each other longingly and study each other. It's more like, here, take the baby. I've got to get this one.
Yeah, you pass the baby off, take the toddler, yeah.
Yeah, that's hard. It's hard. Yeah. So, yeah, you got to be a student of your spouse. That's good. For me, recently, Sarah's noticed how much more often I'm just not listening to anything. Like, if I'm... If I'm reading an article or something and people are talking to me, I wouldn't even know. I have to be more aware of life in order to study my spouse. So I'll work on that one.
That's a lifetime journey there, buddy.
You've had that problem too.
It doesn't get any better as you get older. So you've got to be real intentional.
I'll just say it's a problem of age, I guess. What's our second one?
Well, if you don't mind, I'm going to jump in just on that one for a moment, because I feel like it's really important. We have 10 that we're going to mention, and for this segment, we might concentrate on this one, but we'll kind of hop on to the other ones too. But I also feel like, I think you said the word intentional, Brian, and I think that is a key word there. Joe was a very good student going through school. You know, I had more fun. He studied. But I think there's something to be said about being a good student. Like, you want to please the teacher. You want to find out what does the teacher want you to learn so that you can be a good student. And then, of course, you apply yourself, right? You apply yourself to the learning process. But in marriage, I think it has to be not just one or two topics. It has to be, what does my spouse need emotionally or physically, spiritually, even medically, financially? And then as you go over those different areas, see if there's even other areas, I'm sure there are. And then as a student of your spouse, to really study that and then practice it. You don't memorize something that you're learning for a particular class without studying and practicing and repeating it over and over and over again. And I think back to like my chemistry labs. I was horrible in chemistry, and just the things I had to do just to get it. I had to do things over and over until I found out what worked. And so I think that's something that we should do with our spouse. We should really stop, look, listen, and then really pursue, what it is that our spouse really needs.
Well, you may have struggled in chemistry, but it's a good thing Joe doesn't struggle at all in chemistry, huh?
That's right.
Lauren's rolling her eyes in the back of her head. Come on, I couldn't resist.
But anyway, so that's just the first one. And then if we were just going to take the next couple ones for this first part of our time with you, another one would be to pursue oneness in your marriage and not isolation. And that takes practice to, learn to be more together than separating yourselves apart, and that's in so many areas. And another point would be to be sure that you have, you know, you leave what's behind, and then you cleave together and you weave a life together. So leave, cleave, and weave. And then a fourth one would be that husbands should practice leading and really leading your wife well. And then a wife should learn to come alongside her husband and complete him and help. A helper is not a lesser role. Actually, I think a helper can be a very big role and sometimes a more important role than the leader, in that you're having to be attentive to the things that are going on around you. And then lastly, and we can touch on any of these if you are interested, but the fifth one would be to talk about your differences and find solutions in those. And as we all know, right, every single one of us that are talking this morning, we have differences in our marriage that we have to find solutions for.
Now, you know, Cindy, some women listening might be uncomfortable with what you were saying about, like, what do you mean, let him lead? Like, he has to tell me what to do? What are you talking about?
I actually love this point so much, because I think if women start to have that kind of an attitude, I think they're looking at it the wrong way. I really do. I feel that, you know, in any situation, you know, you have a leader and you have a follower. In a country, you don't have two presidents, you have one. And so you have to begin to understand it's not a matter of power so much as it is understanding what each other's positions are. And in our marriage, there's oftentimes I take the lead, but Joe gives me that lead because I'm better at it. And that's what a leader does. A leader looks at all the different things in the situation and chooses what the right thing is to do. So I've never felt like, oh, I'm the lesser person in this marriage because I'm just the helper and I just sweep up the dust after it settles. That's not my role. My role is to complete him, and his role is to be a good leader. And I've shared this before, but I feel like this is really important. There was a time that my hair was falling out. It was a really tough time in our life, in our marriage. All of our parents died. My brother died. There was just a lot going on, and Christina was soon to be married. And I was thinking, I'm going to need a wig because my hair was falling out so badly. And someone had called me to get together, and my husband said to me, you know, if this person needs as much as she normally needs, I'm going to ask you to not get together with her.
Oh, wow.
That's how he leads. He didn't lead and say, you're not getting together with that person. So there's a leadership quality that I think a husband should have. And I am very thankful that my husband was intentional to look after me in that way. And so when we start to look at the leadership person as you're squashing my life, that's the wrong way to do it. But then a husband who leads properly will not have a wife who is feeling that way at all.
Right. Absolutely.
We've gone through the first five. Which one of you has taken number six on our list?
Well, I'll go with number six. And I think of all the things we're going to talk about here today, Brian, this one is an essential that we all need to do. Just kind of make a commitment to a New Year's resolution, whatever you want to do, however you want to say it, and it's to pray with your spouse. Pray with your spouse, pray for your spouse. And I think this is an essential to really building strong marriages. And you know, what we do practically speaking is, you know, we end every day in praying, and it's a good time. And we, at the end of that prayer, we kiss and say, I love you. And that's just a non-negotiable for us. And I was quite surprised the other day. I mean, there's a national leader in ministry I was talking to, and he says, I never pray with my spouse. And I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. How do you really excel in what you're doing if you're not connecting with the most important person in your world, and that's your spouse? So I would say, if there's one takeaway from this time together, it would be just the importance of praying for your spouse and with your spouse. And the next one is just encourage one another, show respect and admire your spouse, and just love sacrificially. And I think that's where the husband needs to step up. And I mean, if I could just tie this back into number four about the husband, just the importance of leading responsibly, is just all those things are essentials to really leading responsibly. And I would say this, that if a husband is doing those things, encouraging his spouse, showing respect, admiring, loving sacrificially. You know, having your wife submit to what it is that needs to be done, that's easy to do at that point for the spouse because they want to come alongside and help. And so I think, you know, we need to love as husbands. We need to love our wife as Christ loved the church. And if we can do that one, then a lot of the other issues that we're talking about here when it comes to marriage will fall right into place. And that's where the last one is, really making your marriage your ministry. And I would say, quite honestly, that is really who me and Cindy are. We recognize that our life together is our number one priority ministry to have and that we have in our life.
You know, I think a lot of people, after they've been married for a number of years, they struggle with number eight, show respect and admire your spouse. Because especially when you're in the difficulty of raising children, your spouse can be more annoying than admirable. I'm not talking about Sarah. Ron told me about this. I don't, you know, what do I know? So what does that look like in a practical sense to respect and admire your spouse?
Well, I think there's, you know, we could start with a list. You know, what did we admire about our spouse when we were dating? What are some of the things that we really admired? And just start with a list. Maybe don't expect that you're going to come up with 10. Come up with 3. Maybe it was that they were hard workers. Maybe it was that they had a great sense of humor. You know, what are the things that you really admired? And some of those things, you know, the truth be told, some of those things may get, like, you know, you might get aggravated with them or frustrated when you're married and you're thinking, well, that good sense of humor doesn't come in handy right now, you know, when we're trying to have a good conversation and you're just, you know, trying to be funny. But we have to look at those things and say, you know, his humor or his, you know, hard work is something good in our marriage, and to really look at those things and be able to concentrate on them rather than all the negatives, because we all have negative things in our personality. And when we start to concentrate on those negative things, then we show no respect and we have no admiration for our spouse.
Yeah, you almost have to remind yourself on a regular basis about what you respect and admire about your spouse, or you can get lost in the negative.
Absolutely.
Sure. And, you know, too, along life's way, things change, you know? I mean, Joe's no longer working, if you will, at the office, but I see him working so hard in ministry and the different things that he is in charge of, and he's a great leader, and so I admire that. There's some of the things that he does that I really wouldn't want to do because I'm not a leadership person in the same way that he is.
On the other hand, Cindy is a leader because she's doing a lot of things that I would find a little overwhelming for me to do. She just comes by it naturally, and there's it's very common, I think, in our day to just say thank you for doing this and doing that, whatever it is you're doing. And that's a way of showing admiration, just learning to say thank you for those things. And it may be little things, but those little things are cumulative. And I think it's really important to be very intentional about just saying thank you to each other.
You know, I just want to add, too, like even for us, whoever gets Joey ready in the morning, the other one usually says thank you. You know, and that's just it's just part of our routine that we do every single day. And sometimes I'll go and look in the sink and the dishes are put in the dishwasher. And I say, Joe, thanks for putting the dishes in the dishwasher. You know, just little things. Yesterday, I think I spent 6 hours updating our password book and doing, you know, getting everything in order. And he thanked me for that. And I thought, you know, that's nice. He could have just said, you know, oh, glad you got it done, you know, but he thanked me.
I'll tell you
about
that, John.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend that.
No, don't do that.
No, but, you know, Sarah and I went through a phase, too, where we had to practice intentionality when it comes to thank yous. I mean, does she have to thank me if I do something that needs to get done that I'm perfectly capable of doing? I shouldn't have to. But it helps when she does. And likewise.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, I think there's couples even that could go for years not having commented to each other about what they admire and respect about each other. And so
exactly.
I love that you two modeled that, because somebody needed to hear it. You almost have to make a practice of it at like a, maybe go out to dinner and on the date, be intentional about saying, hey, I want to be sure you understand what I love and admire about you. I'm going to tell you what it is, or write a note or something, because it can be years before someone says something.
Sure. And can I just add too, for the person that maybe it's hard to say thank you, it doesn't always come easily. And sometimes you really don't even want to because you don't appreciate so many other things in the marriage that are happening right now. But I think please and thank you. My parents used to say this, please and thank you go a long way. And that in our house, you didn't just get stuff. You said please and you said thank you. And I do really feel as you practice that, you do gain a relationship with your spouse and even people at work and in ministry. Those two words, well, those two phrases, please and then thank you, two words, are very, very important.
You know, and your children see what's going on, too.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, and many times, you know, we'll use Joey as an example here. But Joey, well, when we're doing something for him, I mean, he doesn't have a very big vocabulary. But when we do something for him, he asks us to do something. He'll say, please and thank you.
Aww.
You know, and it's just very sincere. Mm-hmm. But where did he get that from? Right. I mean, he got that from listening to mom and dad talking and interacting with each other.
And he wouldn't probably get some of those things if he didn't. Because that's how important it is in our family. And he can say those words, and so he should.
Yeah, and you know what? The model you guys have given him, he's a tender-hearted man, your son Joey. I just love spending time with him. He just exudes joy, and he does. He says those please and thank yous. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Right, absolutely, right.
Now, I think I want to squeeze in one more to chat about here.
Sure.
Number 7 on your list was encourage. So how can we encourage our spouses?
You know, I feel for me that's a little bit of an easy one because I do believe that's probably my top spiritual gift is encouragement and exhortation. And so I feel like it's easy for me to encourage my husband and others. But I will also say that when things aren't going well, it's really also easy to withhold that. And so I feel people should take that this word encouragement and really put it to practice and ask yourself, how can I encourage my spouse to do better, to be encouraged in their job, to be encouraged in their walk with the Lord? Come write yourself a few different points of things that you see that you want to encourage them. And especially if they're really low about something and really emotionally having a hard time with something, to really find ways to encourage them through that.
Yeah, you know, and putting a different spin on our conversation here, Brian, I think it's really important to keep in mind that a message I once heard from somebody was like that the number one evangelistic tool that you can have for reaching your neighbors with the gospel is a successful marriage. And you think back, we did 10 things here. I mean, each of these 10 points, our books have been written about each of these, right? And so the question that we need to ask ourselves is, what's the motivation for us to do any of these things? And I think that's where, you know, starting off the new year, having a healthy perspective and motivation is critically important if we're going to pursue oneness in a marriage relationship. And from my perspective, I mean, I kind of filter everything through this grid of my desire has always been to see a revival take place, an awakening take place, in not just in, you know, Northeast Ohio, but around the world. And that revival begins with you individually, yourself, and then that spreads to your marriage, and then that spreads to your family. And, you know, for most of us, that's our world. And if you have any hint of desire to see revival become a reality, then the number one thing that you need to be doing is making sure that, number one, you have a right relationship with the Lord, but number two, that your relationship with your spouse is right. And, you know, having, you know, praying for revival and building strong marriages and families, you know, that's two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. And so I find it really difficult to, for me to understand and listen to people who are, you know, saying spiritual type things, and yet they are kind of throwing their spouse to the curb. That doesn't make any sense at all to me. But where I see marriages being, you know, each one encouraging one another and lifting one another up, then if they add to, and we need to be praying for spiritual revival, well, that guy has my attention at that point, because I'm seeing his commitment to the Lord being reflected in his marriage. And so I think that's the perspective and motivation we need to have to do any of these 10 things.
Absolutely. Joe and Cindy Farini with My Marriage Matters, thank you so much for your list today and your advice about 10 ways to focus on marriage this coming year. If folks want to see the list or learn more about your ministry, how do they do it?
Well, yes, I'm going to put the list on as soon as we get off the call here. I'm going to put the list on My Marriage Matters on Facebook and copy it and maybe take one a month and just concentrate on that. And then at the end of the year, you'll have a whole new marriage, you know, if you practice these things. We'd love to have you come there and join us there. And you can also go to joefarini.com or cindyfarini.com, where this conversation will be posted probably tomorrow.
Wonderful. Thanks again, you two. Can't wait till next time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.